morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday, January 7th, 2012 meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. Good to see all of you in the audience. I hope you've signed up and are ready to testify. And if you do want to testify, we do need you to sign up. There's forms at the front desk. All of you who have not been here with us before. First item on the agenda is number 10, sport fishing regulations. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Craig Burley.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Deputy Director Storer, for the record, my name is Craig Burley. I'm the Fish Management Division Manager for the Fish Program. And what I'd like to do today is orient us on where we are in the process for adopting sport rules, then briefly provide you with a summary of the comment we received on a number of proposals where we received the greatest number of responses, and then leave the balance of the time for public testimony. So, as you recall, in December, I provided a briefing to the Commission on each of the 18 proposals that we currently are seeking public comment on. Today, again, we will have public testimony on those proposals. During the January-February time period, department staff will assess the comment that we've received both in writing through December 30th as well as a comment that we've received today, and we'll be formulating recommendations to the Commission. We'll be meeting with the Fish Committee during the January-February time period, and then bringing recommendations for adoption to the Commission at the February meeting. Those regulations then would take effect on May 1. In your notebooks, Commissioners, you have a summary of public testimony that was received through December 20th. I will be highlighting comment that we've received through December 30th. After today's meeting, department staff will be updating those comments to reflect testimony that was received through the 30th of December as well as today. And that updated information will be placed on our website. The commissioners will also be receiving electronic copies of the testimony that we have received from the public through December 30th. So you'll have the individual comments that have been received today electronically. What I'd like to do today is focus briefly on five proposals that we've received the most comment on. Those are the classification of northern pike as a prohibited species. This is removing the game fish designation, closing the retention fishery for Puget Sound sturgeon or sturgeon in Puget Sound. Talk a bit about our coastal stream strategy regulation, our Roosevelt Lake walleye regulation, and then the Kettle River fishery regulation. The northern pike classification proposing to drop the game fish designation has received a lot of public testimony, both in support of that change as well as in opposition. A lot of testimony is focused around the actual management of northern pike and the concern that if we change the designation that will impact the sport fishery. And so let me walk through these comments that we've heard quite a bit of comment that's in support of this in that it signals to the public that managing these non-native species as a prohibited species is consistent with our conservation concerns and with our management of native species. There is a recognition that quite a bit of financial resources have been expended in Northeast Washington, particularly in the Pend Oreille for native species and northern pike population expansion is potentially impacting those investments. We've also heard testimony that there's an interest in allowing some additional gear types to more effectively harvest northern pike and reduce their populations. Those include archery and spearfishing. And then we also received some comment that was suggesting that a mandatory retention be required. Again, as I mentioned earlier, there is a concern from the sport fishing community that by removing the game fish designation that will have a potential to impact their sport fishery, as well as impacting the local economy by reducing the fishing for these species. And there has been some proposals that rather than see a game fish designation removal, we should be managing these fish as a game fish and managing them with a size limit and to protect larger size fish. The next regulation, we received quite a bit of test.
Madam Chair.
Sorry. Commissioner Jennings.
Your last comment about manage for larger size fish, I didn't understand.
Commissioner Jennings, we've received quite a bit of public testimony that would like the department to manage northern pike and the Ponderay system as a game fish, instituting a size limit to ensure that larger northern pike are protected in the river to provide a quality fishery on larger northern pike.
Which might also increase spawning potential for that population.
Likely that would be the case.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think this population has been significantly growing over the last few years. And in last year's major runoff we had, we have picked up a few of the northern pikes in Lake Roosevelt in the Columbia River. And I think there's a significant concern that if that population spreads down the Columbia, it could have a major impact on some other fisheries that wouldn't be very productive for us. So I think there's a big concern, bigger than just fishing on the Ponderay River, on these northern pikes population.
That is correct, Commissioner Duvia. There are two main conservation concerns. One is the impacts to the native fish species where the northern pike are currently residing, as well as their spread to other waters downstream into the Columbia River, as well as illegal stocking into other waters.
Commissioner Mencken.
Have we considered the impact of predation on listed salmonids in the lower river if this animal was to spread into the main stem of Columbia?
Yes, Commissioner Mencken, that is one of the drivers for this regulation. The regulation really is sending the message to the public about how the department views northern pike in Washington and our concerns for their spread, and if they were to get into the Columbia River system, the dire impacts that they could have on the native fish species.
Has NOAA rendered an opinion on this at all? Do they know that this is happening?
We have received a letter from National Marine Fisheries Service in support of this regulation, as well as the regulation number two, which is allowing the use of two poles in this area to facilitate removal of the fish. So, yes, we do have a comment from National Marine Fisheries Service.
Thank you.
Commissioner Perry.
What streams, or maybe more generally, what area does the northern pike occupy now?
Commissioner Perry, are you referring to Washington State?
Yeah.
So northern pike currently are in northeast Washington in the Ponderay River. They're also in Long Lake in the Spokane area, and then we have evidence that they've been introduced in some closed lakes around the Spokane area.
Well, I would just really encourage anything we could do to limit their population. I live on Moses Lake, and we've seen what walleye pike do to the other fisheries in that lake, and it's devastating. That's pretty much all we have now is walleye pike, and it seems to me like the northern pike would have the same impact, particularly on salmon species in the Columbia River. It seems to me like there should be all effort to not only limit their population, but eliminate that fish if at all possible.
Other questions? I think it is a good idea for us to ask questions as you go along, since you're going to be going through a number of roles here.
Thank you, Chair Walker. So the next regulation that I wanted to talk to you about is the Puget Sound sturgeon, and the proposal here is to close retention of white sturgeon in the Puget Sound and freshwater tributaries. Again, quite a bit of public comment on this topic. We've heard comment that supports this closure until we have a better understanding of the composition of those fish. There's some question about the composition relative to Fraser River white sturgeon and Columbia River white sturgeon. We also have heard that there's recognition of a concern for the conservation of white sturgeon, and there's some support for this rule. We also, though, have heard concern that this closure of a retention fishery in the Puget Sound area is inconsistent with the Columbia River white sturgeon fishery that allows retention. We've also heard that there'd be economic impacts to local communities if we were to close retention of white sturgeon. We also heard concerns about a potential increase in tribal harvest of sturgeon in Puget Sound if this was to go into effect. And then we have received quite a few suggestions to modify the regulation rather than requiring non-retention, and we've heard suggestions that range from reducing the number of white sturgeon that could be retained annually to restrict the number of fish by river system in the Puget Sound area that could be retained, as well as potentially narrowing the slot limit of the size of white sturgeon. And we have received a petition during the comment period that's in opposition to this rule and asks that the commission not adopt that rule. And I believe by the December 30th date, there were somewhere in the neighborhood of under 100 signatures at that time. I hear that there may be more signatures now.
Any questions, Commissioner Schmitten?
Great, thank you very much. Yesterday we had a chance to have our annual review of the Columbia River white sturgeon. In that review, we had a chance to look at the policy again, policy C3001. I noticed that there's fairly good guidance on management of sturgeon, Columbia River sturgeon outside the Columbia River. In this bullet, it says manage sturgeon harvest outside the main stem Columbia River consistent with lower Columbia River sturgeon conservation and management needs. And we haven't reached the point, although we may sooner than we'd like, reach the point of having to shut down the Columbia. I'm wondering if we're making a step too fast by simply closing this area when we're not looking at the Columbia River in a similar vein immediately.
The other thing is we absolutely need a DNA composition review to know where these fish are from. And so this just came to me yesterday, and I read this, and I thought it applied appropriately to what we're discussing under number 9.
Commissioner Carpenter?
I want to ditto what Commissioner Smitten said, because I just am somewhat familiar with that fishery, Craig, and I have some real concerns about the data and the knowledge that the agency has. For example, the decline in the Columbia River sturgeon, do we know if that's related to forage, water temperature, global warming, or what other contributing factors, or perhaps maybe the lower Columbia River sturgeon are out migrating to other areas, so there's perhaps a higher abundance of sturgeon in Puget Sound than we previously knew, and perhaps that's why the catch rates have gone up. I think we need to take some steps somewhat less than closing it, and I think we'll probably talk about it, that at some length.
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I guess from what I've been learning on sturgeon, trend analysis is probably our best information and decision-making tool we have. And I was confused in our Fish Committee meeting, but I didn't approach it then, that we have a decreasing harvest in the Columbia, but we have an increasing harvest in the Puget Sound, which would imply a significant different problem in the Puget Sound area. So is there any knowledge the staff has that if we have an increasing harvest trend, why doesn't it imply that we have a healthier or more abundant population in the Puget Sound?
Thank you, Commissioner Duvia. The data that we have on sturgeon in the Puget Sound is related to our harvest data that we receive in our catch record card data. And so currently there are no constraints set on harvest of white sturgeon in Puget Sound. So we basically have the fishery open with the 5 fish annual limit. And so what we're seeing, I think, is an increased interest in fishing for white sturgeon in Puget Sound that we haven't seen in the past. And I believe we speculate that there's been some increase in interest after some information was put on the website or on the internet showing some large concentrations of white sturgeon in some areas in Puget Sound. And so we can't directly attribute the increases to that, but that's anecdotally what we think. And in the Columbia River, we're seeing constraints in seasons and lengths and et cetera, which I think, and lowering of our harvest guideline, which has caused some decrease in fishing there.
Commissioner Mencken?
What would happen if we did this? Rather than to prohibit retention on sturgeon in Puget Sound, we move to, say, a seasonal limit of 2 fish. And during that period of time, we allow the recreational community to begin to collect information for us on those sturgeon that they harvested. And I would be willing to bet that the recreational community would rise to the occasion. During that period of time, they could collect information that would lead us genetic information, samples for genetic analysis. They could get some demographic information, length, frequency, et cetera, on the fish that they catch and release, as well as the fish that they retain, and have this in effect for 1 year, and then go back and revisit it at the end of the year based on the information that they gathered for us.
Commissioner Mencken, we staff have looked at the proportion of catch by catch record card. So looking at the number of our anglers that report one sturgeon caught on their catch record card versus 2, 3, 4, 5. And about 91% of the sturgeon are harvested in Puget Sound are reported as either one or two fish caught per catch record card. So likely that would not have much of a dampening effect on the harvest itself. About 75% of the fish are harvested with 75% of the catch record cards have only one sturgeon on them. So likely we would see a similar harvest to what we're seeing now. But if the concept is reducing the annual limit to say one or two fish, we'd see some effect, but it still would likely be a large number of fish caught.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think part of it is, when I'm looking at this, if we're treating these as Columbia River sturgeon, and we look at the harvest rate back in, say, 2000, 2001, and the proportional decreases we put in place for lower Columbia River, if we took that same level of harvest from Puget Sound and applied that same decrease, we're looking at a very small number of fish that would be allowed to be caught. So to me, if we're treating it equally with lower Columbia River, the number is going to have to come down from the 900 it is now to something well below 100, based on my back-of-the-envelope calculations of how we've treated the fishery in the Columbia River. The other part that no one's mentioned this morning is that, or that I didn't hear people mention, is that a significant portion, and we don't know what portion, is probably associated with the Fraser River in British Columbia, which is listed as a Canadian, their equivalent to endangered. And so I think we need to be very careful as a commission treating other countries' endangered species in a casual manner. We expect them to honor our concerns from conservation. We need to be doing the same to theirs. So today, before we hear the public testimony, I'm very strongly supportive of closing the Puget Sound sturgeon fishery as it is now, or reducing it based on the decrease in proportion from the harvest that was occurring in, say, 2000, 2001.
Are there comments or questions on this one?
I have a question.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
Commissioner Carpenter?
I guess referring to Commissioner Jennings, what do we know about the stock composition? Do we know enough to have a rational discussion about run composition, Fraser versus Columbia versus Skagit versus other rivers? Do we know that, or are we just sort of guessing?
Commissioner Carpenter, we do have data from our tagging efforts in the Columbia that indicate that we have observed Columbia River white sturgeon caught in our Puget Sound fisheries. These are based on voluntary returns of tagged tags to the department. So we do have a good indication that Columbia River fish are being caught in Puget Sound. We also do not have any information that would indicate that there are spawning fish in the Puget Sound system. So while we don't have direct evidence that Fraser River fish are in the Puget Sound fishery, it's highly likely that they are, given the proximity and the movement patterns. But we lack catch composition data of the sturgeon that are caught in Puget Sound.
Well, if I may, a follow-up. Conservation is obviously our first obligation and responsibility. And I totally agree with that, providing the data reflects that that's what we need to do. I also have some very serious concerns about our responsibility to provide meaningful recreational opportunity. And having said that, I link that to the economic situation that's ongoing in this state as it relates to people out of jobs, license sales, sales tax revenue. I think that's also a component of what we need to think about when we make a decision on this rule proposal.
Okay, very good.
The next proposal I'd like to talk about is the implementation of our implementation of our stream strategy in the coastal systems. As you recall, we implemented this strategy in Puget Sound and the Straits about 2 years ago. The proposal is to move to a river systems as closed unless specifically listed in our pamphlet. In general, we have received support for this rule. However, typically with that support comes also recommendations to modify the proposal for specific river systems. And one of those that we've received the most comment on is the Willapa system and the proposal to close the steelhead fishery earlier on February 28th. And so we've gotten a lot of comment that indicates that there's some question about our escapement objectives that we've set for the Willapa system and a request that we review that, thinking that they may be set too high, and that if those escapement objectives were set more accurately, that then this fishery could be open longer. And so we've received that comment by quite a number of individuals. We've also received some comment that would request that no wild steelhead retention occur on the coast. We've also received testimony suggesting that selective gear rules be applied to all anadromous waters. And that finally, there has been some concern expressed that this will continue to result in lost recreational opportunity.
Questions? And this one, Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I wondered when I read this, seems like changing it around as you described, closed unless stated in the pamphlet that it would be open, is more regulatory, and that it would there would need to be additional monitoring and evaluation of streams to determine whether it'd be open or not. Is that a fair assessment, or would you have a different view?
Commissioner Perry, the intent here is to move from a situation where a stream is open from the first Saturday in June through October 31, absent any regulations or monitoring of the fishery. And the proposal is designed to provide protection in those systems that we don't have resources to monitor, to ensure that we're protecting juvenile salmonids in their natal streams. And so what this would require is that we take a conservative approach and provide protection, and then in those areas where we have identified fishing opportunities appropriate, then we list those in the pamphlet.
Wouldn't this result, though, in a decrease in recreational opportunity overall?
Commissioner Perry, that's likely the case. However, what we've seen in the Puget Sound system is this has worked well. We do have a proposal in this current package that I hadn't planned to speak to today, but it talks about providing some additional opportunity in the Puget Sound system that we've identified since we implemented this action 2 years ago. So what we've done is, in effect, identified additional opportunity that the public has indicated some support for. So there are many streams in the state that receive little or no fishing pressure, and so this effectively would not impact those streams at all.
Still seems like it would take more effort to determine whether something should be open or not. And with reduced budgets and staff and so forth, that might be difficult to do, but I'll leave it at that.
Okay, then no other comments. I was looking at the testimony, the written testimony that Frank Amato submitted. Do you recall this? It's a couple pages. We received it, I don't know if we received it by the deadline, but it refers to a number of rules for the Nacelle River, having to do with wild steelhead, closing it sooner, earlier. There's one having to do with disallowing power boats upstream on the Nacelle River, wild coho related. So I'd just like you to take a look at these rules again, see if they are something that we could consider at this late a date. I don't know if any of them were vetted, but I'd like to bring that to your attention.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Wecker. The department, schedule from this point would be to take all of the written comment that we received through December 30th, as well as the comment that we receive here today, take that back, have discussions with staff to determine what appropriate modifications there are to the package that we've presented, and then we'd have the opportunity to talk with the Fish Committee prior to the February adoption, where we would then make those final recommendations. So we plan to take a look at all of the comments that we received.
Okay. Well, I know Frank, he's been around for a long time, very knowledgeable guy, so just wanted to bring that to your attention. Okay. Anything else on this one? Okay. Proceed.
Next regulation is relative to the walleye regulations on Lake Roosevelt. As you recall, this proposal is to increase the daily limit from 8 walleye to 16 walleye, maintaining the one fish over 22-inch limit. We have received some support for this regulation relative to its ability to control the walleye population. However, we have also received some testimony that questions whether or not this would go far enough. Is this regulation adequate to address the numbers of smaller size walleye that we're seeing, and ultimately the walleye predation issue on kokanee and rainbow trout? Coupled with that, we've seen a request for altering or modifying our proposal to retain the 8 fish daily limit, but to drop the one fish over 22 inch and to open the lower Spokane River in the springtime. Currently, there's a closure on the Spokane River to walleye during the April-May time period. We've also heard the comment that there is no science to justify this proposal, that it would impact a popular sport fishery. And then finally, at our Inland Fish Policy Advisory Group meeting, the group provided a recommendation to the department that rather than the current proposal, the Policy Advisory Group recommended that we modify that rule to have a bonus 8 fish or 8 walleye limit, and that those fish be the smaller size fish that would be less than somewhere around a 14 to 16 inch size that the department could identify.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just some sharing of some additional information on Lake Roosevelt. We have basically 3 major tournaments on the walleye and then upper Lake Roosevelt, where this problem persists more than those places. And the poundage that they come in on those tournaments has significantly dropped. The last tournament provided about half the normal weight for the sportsmen when they came in. Consistently throughout the year, the walleye are significantly thinner and lighter and not as quite as abundant. There's no conclusion that I'm aware of talking with Region 1 and with Craig and others what the cause is of the weight change or abundance, but at the same time, our creel studies in I think it was the early 2000s suggested that we harvest about 100,000 walleye a year, and our current rate of harvest is about 40,000. So I think that one of the problems might be that we have an overabundance of fish on the food supply. The main problem that we saw is last year, because of repairs needed at Grand Coulee Dam, they had to draw the lake down an additional 40 to 50 feet. And that was a significant event. It's only happened twice before to draw it down that far. A lot of the food that was normally found in the site of the caught walleye no longer is there. Leeches and so forth have disappeared as one of the food sources, so that could be related to that. I'm not knowledgeable enough to know that, but what I helped bring this issue to the staff, and staff suggested the change in rules. I'm kind of at the point that, and the feedback I'm getting from some of the walleye clubs and local fishermen is that we need to maybe wait a year or two to see if the drawdown was the problem, and this is a short-term situation that resolves itself, and that we make an effort to study the food source is probably the biggest input, is that we don't know really what those fish are surviving on, and that we don't overreact to it. And the walleye is probably the main economic basis for that area up there right now. The trout fishery was totally wiped out with that drawdown, so it'll probably be quite a while before that gets back in. So for the next 2 or 3 years, the economic benefit to that community is significant for a good walleye population, so it's important that we continue to monitor this thing, but I'm not sure we have a good answer, and that maybe we should wait to get more information before we change the catch limit.
Any other comments on this one? Okay.
The next regulation is relative to the Kettle River, and the Kettle River regulation is proposing to relax the selective gear rules in a portion of this river system near the city of Curlew. The idea is to provide some opportunity for kids and families to fish using bait and traditional gear types. We have received a petition from the community to remove the selective gear rules for the entire Kettle River system, which would expand this proposal beyond the local area and would extend down to the Barstow Bridge. We also have heard quite a bit of, and I believe there's around 550 signatures on that petition. We also have heard quite a bit of public testimony that would ask the department, the commission, to retain the current selective gear rules to conserve the trout and maintain the quality fishery. They contend that with the selective gear rules in place, it's resulted in more fish present in the river to harvest. There's also been comment received that indicates that there is some bait fishing opportunities already present in the area and other waters, and that this regulation is not needed. And then finally, there has been a proposal to modify the current rule that would allow bait to be used by juvenile anglers only, which would sort of move partway towards the current proposal.
Questions? Commissioner Jennings first.
What's the size of the local area in question? 6 miles of stream? Or
I believe about 9% of the river that's currently regulated under selective gear rules. That includes the Canadian waters. And I can't recall the exact number of river miles, but I think that's somewhere in the 6 to 10 river miles, I'm trying to recall from memory.
And were the current selective gear rules put in place for conservation reasons?
They were put in place to try to address some concerns that the department had for the density, low densities of trout in the system. So it was twofold. One, to try to increase densities of trout, and also to provide what was deemed a quality fishery at that time, selective gear rules, 12 fish or 12 inch minimum size.
And do our Canadian counterparts have any concerns about this?
I haven't spoken directly with the Canadian government. The regulations that are currently in place in Canada, in the Canadian stretch of this river, are similar to our selective gear rules.
Thank you.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Craig, this is not an area that I'm particularly familiar with, but my basic question is this both a bank fishery and a boat fishery? I ask that as it relates to particular compliance with some of these proposals.
Commissioner Carpenter, I am sure there is quite a bit of bank opportunity in this area. I'm not sure how much boat effort is used in the area.
Thank you.
Commissioner Perry was next.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. Did you say that only 9% of the river is designated for selective gear?
Commissioner Perry, what I was attempting to do was articulate the proportion of the river that's being considered for the elimination of the selective gear rule. So if we look at the Kettle River from Barstow Bridge, which is sort of at the upper end of what we call Lake Roosevelt, if you look from there up, traveling into Canada and then back into Washington around the city of Curlew, if you look at that entire river reach, the section that we're talking about is about 9%, if I recall correctly.
Thank you.
Commissioner Duvia?
Yeah, I might add a little clarity to this thing. There's about 60-70 miles of the Kettle River that's selective gear, and the staff's proposal is about 9-10% of that opportunity. And this is the Kettle River Redevelopment Coalition put this kind of together and petitioned the two county commissioners, Stevens and Ferry Counties, to look at this to see if they couldn't give some opportunity for youth fishing. So it was requested, and staff looked into it, met with the county commissioners in both counties, and came up with a recommendation on it. It appears that in the early 1990s, department was requested to make it special gear. So it's right now very lightly fished by fly fishermen, and they do wading as well as drifting the river to do this. It's probably the most underused 70 miles of fishing in the state of Washington. This is not a very dense population, and there's not a real good fishery. There's a nice red band rainbow catchery there, and it has improved. In the 90s, they did some testing, and the productivity of the river was marginal, and so they agreed, I think, to put in a selective gear because they couldn't get the productivity they thought was necessary. But as you it's basically a question of, can we provide an opportunity for youth fishing, which I'm kind of for, without impacting the level of fish available in the river? It's a river that's, I think, could be enhanced maybe by planting or net pens or something. But I can't imagine the youth impacting to take that significantly. This runs right next to the Canadian border for most of this stretch stuff. But it's one that I think the staff has done a really good job of working with the stakeholders and the county commissioners, and one that's just recommendation that whatever the staff decides. And I think the two questions is, do we open up this 10% stretch of the river for bait fishing or any gear, or do we help change the rules so that we have youth fishing 15 and below can use whatever fish source they want. That offers some complexity in enforcement, but it does offer the, probably the best opportunity to alleviate from youth situations. So whatever the staff recommends, it's my opinion, is what we should do on this.
Commissioner Smith?
Just a question, Craig. This sort of strategy, has it been implemented many times in other streams in the state? And if so, has it been successful? Have you seen more engaged youth opportunity without detriment of the population, the fish population?
Commissioner Smith, are you referring to the modification to allow bait for kids only?
In selected portions of any given stream.
I'm not aware of this, that type of regulation in place anywhere else in the state at this time. Currently, we have waters designated as juvenile fishing only, and we have seen good participation by youth in those fisheries, but I'm not aware of a particular instance where we have different gear types for youth and adults.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Craig, is this strictly managed for wild trout, or is there a hatchery component as part of this river?
Currently, there are no hatchery fish stocked in the Kettle River. The department did attempt some stocking in the late 90s and then again for a couple of years in the early 2000s to try to increase the density of trout in the system, but that didn't appear to be successful over the long term. So currently there are not hatchery trout stocked in the system.
Thank you.
Okay. Some more. Commissioner Kenny, chance here.
Just a quick clarification. So after the in the 90s when I went to selective fisheries or selective gear, then was there any results from that? Did like the red band trout population increase that you know of, or was that the specific goal of the closure or of the selective gear as opposed to bait?
So the department did, Commissioner Keeney, did do some evaluation of those regulations after they were implemented in the early 90s. We saw mixed results. There was some indication of increase in numbers of or densities of trout in the area, but we also at that time had overlaid the stocking of red band rainbow trout in the river. So I think there was a combination of those two factors that resulted in the increased density. We did hear that the community at the time was supportive of that regulation and did see some increase in fishing success. We also saw that there was a lack of compliance in those regulations during that time period that we were monitoring that sort of confounded the situation as well. So I would say we had mixed results.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, you partially answered my question already, but are the red band trout that are found in that stream, are they unique to Washington? And is there any classification status of those fish?
Commissioner Perry, red band rainbow trout are more broadly distributed than in just Washington State. They're an intermontane species or subspecies, depending on your taxonomic classification. But they're distributed in Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington. They're like most salmonids. There's a population or structure that we see likely populations that would be unique to specific geographic areas within the range of red band rainbow trout.
And they're sustaining themselves in that river now with a healthy population?
Yes, we believe that to be the case.
Under the current rules?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay.
So that concludes the comments that I wanted to highlight today. Before we moved into public testimony, I would ask the commission if there are any other regulations or questions that you had of me.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the Nea Bay Area 4B, we had a test fishery there this summer. We had 166 days of effort looking at what we catch when we fish for bottom fish. And we caught five keepers from a lingcod perspective. The lingcod season for Puget Sound as a whole is, I think, a six-week one fish per day limit, and in Nea Bay it's approaching 6 month two fish limit. With the data we got from that test fishery, five keepers out of 166 days of fishing effort, that current limit we have of two fish in 6 months seems very inappropriate. I'm not sure we're going to deal with it now or later, but I just want to be very transparent about my feelings that that current lingcod fishery season for Nea Bay is does not meet the policy for groundfish as far as a precautionary approach and managing that stock safely. Similarly, in Area 4B with Cabazon, looking at that same 166 days of fishing effort, I don't have the exact number here, but I think the number is going to be in the range of five or six or seven Cabazon caught. And again, Cabazon season there is 8 months and two Cabazon per person per day. Again, I look at our limits and the actual results coming from the test fishery, and they don't seem to be in alignment. In addition, both those fisheries for Cabazon and lingcod are resulting in a very large number of bycatch of rockfish that are not to be caught, canaries, coppers, quillbacks, blues, chinas, vermilion. So I'm not sure I'm going to deal with it between now and next month when we adopt the sports fishing regulations as a whole, but I just want to be very clear that I think that we are looking at having to make some changes to those regulations out at 4B.
Thank you. Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks. Thanks, Madam Chair. I just would encourage the department to take, I think, a little harder look at two pole opportunities. I think that's an opportunity that would be a value added to our participants, and it would be one where we could also provide some revenue we need for other areas and sources. I think there's more opportunity, and particularly the Upper Columbia, where we can expand the two-pole opportunity and eventually keep testing it to see where we go on it. But I think we are underutilizing something that's very marketable, very good for our participation people, and it's be good for the department. And I don't think that's in violation of the moratorium on rule changes. I think it's just the opposite. I think it's something we should be looking at as an economic benefit to the business, to the sportsmen, and to the department. So I think we're underutilizing that.
Commissioner Carpenter?
I'd like to support what Commissioner Duvia has just said. I'd also like to have put it on the table. I'd like to see that consideration expanded to the marine areas strictly during selective fishing for salmon. We're raising millions of marked Chinook salmon and coho, primarily Chinook. And I think actually by having a two-pole, it would raise a significant amount of money for the agency. I truly believe from my experience it would reduce hooking mortality because people would catch their two fish bag limit and get off the water instead of fishing for days and days or for a 16-hour day to try and catch a fish when you're wading through wild fish to get a hatchery. I think based on the economy, the harvestability of hatchery fish, the amount of money we're spending, the amount of funding that is needed in this agency to get things ratcheted back up, I know there's some work to do that would have to go through the North of Falcon process as it relates to hooking mortality and tribal, but I think it's something that we need to look at. I think it could be a significant contributor economically.
Commissioner Carpenter, if I might, the department has identified two-pole fishing opportunities, a topic that we want to discuss during this North of Falcon time period to identify locations that we may be able to implement that this next year.
Thank you. I just want to emphasize again, I'm talking only during a selective time frame.
Thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I had a question on number 16, Wind River Increase Open Area, and this is really more general than question than just on this specific site, but that my notes indicate that it relates to this also. But it indicates you want to open 2 miles of the stream during the fall for catch and release steelhead trout fishing. Does catch and release season on a stream like this, does that affect the fitness of the fish to reproduce, to spawn, and successfully?
Thank you, Commissioner Perry. The proposal is to increase the area that the catch and release fishery would be open in the fall by about 2 miles. The status of steelhead in the Wind River is healthy. It's been meeting its escapement objectives for the last 5 to 10 years. We do think there is some handling mortality associated with catch and release fishing for steelhead. We think that that's within the conservation objectives for the Wind River, and that this additional 2 miles would still be within those conservation guidelines.
But the handling wouldn't affect the fitness of the fish to reproduce.
The Commissioner Perry, the fitness for an individual fish would be impacted, but at the population level, we don't necessarily think that would be the case.
Thank you. Just one other question on number 17. Again, this is maybe a little more general than this. It indicates that you would allow floating devices on this stream, according to number 17 here. Does changing from bank fishing to allow fishing from boats, does that have a conservation impact on the salmonids that might occur in this stream, or really any stream that you would do this on?
Commissioner Perry, this is typically designed to address social aspects associated with a fishery in terms of the type of opportunity we provide. The amount of effort in a river would be the deciding factor in terms of the amount of handle. And so this really is associated with trying to maintain orderly fisheries and to provide the appropriate type of opportunity in that particular river reach.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions for Craig? Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Very good job. Okay, we're going to open our public hearing now. We've got quite a few people who've signed up, and I'll review the rules for all of you. The commission allows each individual 3 minutes. We'd like you to come forward, sit at the front table there, get up fairly close to the microphone, but you don't need to touch it, and speak for 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up. And to give everyone a fair chance, I'll have to interrupt you if you don't stop at that point. So I'll call up two people at a time. That'll make it smoother. Ron Chase, would you come forward, and David Montoya? Okay, Mr. Chase.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Ron Chase. I'm a Puget Sound recreational sturgeon fisherman and the author of the informational report contained in the submitted petition. I'm before you today representing 2,865 members of the Save Our Sturgeon Fishery petition. This petition is a grassroots effort intended to consolidate the voices of local anglers, business owners, and concerned citizens in opposition to the department's proposal to close Puget Sound and tributary rivers to the retention of white sturgeon. Puget Sound recreational anglers appreciate that resource management is a complex and difficult issue. We have great respect for the efforts of our department's biologists and managers to conserve and protect our resources. However, in this instance, the rule change proposal does not rise to the level of critical, warranted, or even necessary. Puget Sound recreational anglers request that the commissioners reject this change by voting no to this proposal. We also request that the commissioners impress upon the department managers that prior to making any further proposals to make changes to the Puget Sound and tributary sturgeon rules and seasons, they produce a comprehensive, science-based Puget Sound stock analysis and fisheries report for presentation to the public and commission. Any further proposal should also include participation and discussion with recreational sportsmen that the changes will affect and incorporate representation from the Puget Sound region. Puget Sound anglers are committed to the conservation of our resources, and we look forward to a cooperative relationship that works to achieve our common goals of sustaining an abundant recreational opportunity for everyone. On a personal note, I would ask the commissioners to carefully consider the input that is to come from my fellow speakers, and then please take 15 minutes to read the report I have submitted with the petition prior to making your decision. I have not taken this issue lightly. I care deeply about this fishery. I have worked diligently to educate myself on the issue so that in the process of educating others, I was fair to the resource and the department. Thank you for your attention to this issue and for providing the opportunity for 2,865 members of this petition to address the commission.
Thank you. Okay, Dave Kuno?
Montoya. David Montoya.
Yeah, I'm calling up someone else.
Excuse me.
Okay, Mr. Montoya.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is David Montoya. Thank you for the opportunity to address this proposed sturgeon closure in Puget Sound. I would like to discuss Puget Sound sturgeon allocation. Averaging the department's catch record card numbers since it started having a catch record card in 2001, the average year take is 510 sturgeon in Puget Sound waters. 2010 year was an anomaly, which will be addressed later. In 2011, there's about 300 fish take, and consistent with every year's average. We realize that this number does not factor in area reductions in line with Columbia reductions, but it establishes a number that reflects increased usage in the region and a lack of historical baseline and user data. We also propose that in any two-year consecutive cycle, harvest exceeds 510 fish, and that number represents more than 3% of the allocated harvest, the department and recreational fishermen work together to implement harvest control measures to ensure that harvest does not exceed allocation over the next two-year cycle. According to policy C-3001, the department is directed to proceed with research, allocation, and regulation of the state sturgeon fishery. The baseline of 510 fish for Puget Sound would be consistent with harvest rates in Willapa and Grays Harbor and would average 3% of the harvestable Columbia River sturgeon across these coastal fisheries and in line with the Oregon coastal fisheries. None of these other areas have been proposed for a closure. Thank you for hearing our objections to this proposed Puget Sound sturgeon closure.
Thank you. Sam Ingram, please come forward. And Mr. Kuna.
I'm Dave Kuno, resident of Muckleteel, a recreational fisher interested in marine conservation, and I'm here to speak in opposition to the department's proposed closure of Puget Sound sturgeon for retention. I heard yesterday's open public comments and the department's annual sturgeon presentation. I came away with the conclusion that the department's or Oregon's model is untested and therefore questionable, and the forecasts were too optimistic. I, as others, disagree with the department's incremental harvest reduction as a plan to increasing the sturgeon population and stopping the decline. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. As was pointed out yesterday, a few more years of this and there won't be any sturgeon left. Rather than hope and overly optimistic projections, we need to err on the side of conservation and come up with a truly significant harvest reductions or a total closure. The commission must do what is necessary to save this resource, even at the expense of recreational and commercial fisheries. Nothing in yesterday's presentation mentioned the department's closure in Puget Sound. Why not? This is the most drastic action the department has taken. Today you will hear from other fishers from Puget Sound. The point I feel is most significant from the department's proposed closure is inequity. Why not incremental harvest reductions used on the Columbia River? Where's the logic? This proposal has put the department and Puget Sound recreational fishers in an adversarial relationship. This helps no one. Given the opportunity, the department would find these fishers willing to accept equitable reductions to help conserve these fish. The department has cited the declining numbers of Fraser River sturgeon, but they haven't shown that they have any solid connection with the Canadian government to have a joint and equitable plan to save sturgeon from both the Columbia and Fraser Rivers, if in fact that is their intention. The department should elevate this issue to a higher management level for a uniform and effective action throughout the areas this fish inhabits. I question the method the department uses to determine whether a closure of this significance should be made. What does it take to reverse such a proposal? Is it a petition? Is a petition adequate, or are emails and letters or a combination? Equity and logic don't seem to be satisfactory. I would like clarification on this for future responses to the department. Had there been more dialogue and negotiation between the department and the recreational fishers impacted, there would be less ire and need to bring this issue to the commission. I'd like to thank the chair and the commission members for their present and past efforts to help conserve marine resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Dean Osterman, would you come forward, please? And Mr. Ingram.
Commission members, my name is Sam Ingram. I'm here in opposition to any rule change for existing sturgeon fishing. I've been fishing in Washington for over 60 years. During that time, I've been an active member of the North of Falcon salmon allocation process. I've served several years as an advisor to the governor and the director of the Department of Fish and Game in regards to steelhead and cutthroat trout. I've also been a licensed guide for over 20 years. The governor stated that she understands the value and importance of the recreational fishing dollars and the impact it has on our economy. This rule change will have an impact on the local economy. As an example, one of the department's biologists, Dana Bass from Colville, travels over here every fall to fish our local rivers. Last year he spent several weeks fishing our local rivers. He spent 2 weeks in a motel in Sultan. His fish were processed in Monroe. He purchased tackle in Lake Stevens. He shopped for gifts in Marysville and Everest, purchased gas, food, bait in all the places he visited during his stay. People who fish in this area want to return to their home with their catch. Under the management of the present biologist, Kirk Kramer, and the current biologist, Breck Barkdahl, we have watched our catch and release seasons on the Skagit, Skykomish, and Stillaguamish rivers disappear over the years. Our local fishing businesses cannot afford another closed season. Fishing attracts big business. Cabela's is building a new business in Marysville as we speak. Do you think they would build a new store in an area known for fishing closures? Our state cannot afford any more loss when it comes to sales tax, hotel, motel, fuel costs, and business taxes. Under this rule change, all will suffer. I urge you to consider the effects this rule will have on our future. I have fished this area for over 20 years, and I have caught one Columbia River tagged fish. This rule change is not necessary. We're all in favor of conservation, but I think there's other ways to achieve this goal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ralph Zalek. Okay, Mr. Osterman.
Hi, my name is Dean Osterman. I'm the Executive Director of Natural Resources for the Kalispell Tribe of Indians in Northeast Washington on the Ponderay River. And I'm here to provide testimony in support of the rule change proposed for declassifying northern pike as a game fish and retaining it as on the prohibited species list or the invasive species list. We think that those rule changes make complete sense in terms of kind of disambiguating the management conflict between what management plans and conservation plans that exist in Northeast Washington and FERC licenses, et cetera, and an ambiguous regulatory structure in Olympia. So declassifying as a game fish is a necessary step to supporting all of the other actions that we're doing in Northeast Washington for native fish, for other game fish species, and all of that. Northern pike pose an unacceptable risk to a variety of different things. Mr. Burley did a pretty good job of describing what some of those risks are. I've been at the Kalispell Tribe for the last 20 years and have spent the vast bulk of that time negotiating FERC licenses at Box Canyon Dam, Boundary Dam, and the other hydroelectric facilities on that particular river system. Northern pike have been the most significant conservation threat since the creation of the hydropower system in that river. So we've got a rapidly expanding population. That population is starting to emigrate. Commissioner Duvia accurately stated there's been increased catch in Lake Roosevelt. There has also been a significant increase of northern pike caught in near Castlegar. So we do have an immigration problem that we need to start mitigating that risk. Not only does it erode FERC licenses, which have, you know, decadal commitments by utilities, we estimate that there is at least $400 million of conservation investment in that watershed alone. Northern pike erode that significantly. Not least of which, I think, for west siders and the east siders that like to come over and fish for anadromous fish, emigration into the anadromous zone is another unacceptable risk that northern pike pose. Don't quite know how long that's going to take for that to occur, but it's happening as we speak. Big water years are, they dramatically increase the probability of emigration and pushing these fish down system. So I guess in conclusion, any rule changes that incentivize the harvest of northern pike, declassifying as a game fish, is all for the good of the conservation situation in Northeast Washington and the balance of the Columbia River Basin. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Nathan Harrigan, please come forward. Mr. Zalek, go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ralph Zalek from Marysville and very avid sturgeon fisherman, among other species. I'm here. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the proposed Puget Sound sturgeon closure. I would like to address the issue of science, information, and conservation. A cornerstone of the WDFW management mission is to use scientific study and information analysis to set the season rules and allocations that are used to protect our resources. The reason given by department managers for the necessity of the purpose closure is to protect the Columbia River sturgeon population. This rule change would close the Puget Sound fishery without ever establishing the relationship and the effect the closure would have on a target area of conservation, the Columbia River. The Columbia River sturgeon fishery is cooperatively studied and managed by a joint state committee for Washington and Oregon. The committee produces an annual report concerning stock statutes, fisheries, recommendation for harvest, and allocation. Columbia River fisheries biologists have historically considered a Puget Sound recreational harvest has had such a minimal and insufficient impact on the Columbia River sturgeon population, it has never been included in any of the Joint Committee's research or reports as a conservation issue or concern. During a public comment meeting in Mill Creek, it was requested of the department biologists to share and explain any research, studies, stock analysis, impact statements, or any other data that establishes a scientific basis for requesting disclosure. Biologists are also asked to explain how targeting one
least impact fisheries for closure while continuing to harvest thousands of sturgeon from the area target for conservation. Represents a necessary management or conservation strategy. The department biologists and managers are unable to produce this information because it simply does not currently exist beyond annual harvest reports. This proposed closure does not represent the management approach that the department constituents expect. Before any changes are implemented to the Puget Sound sturgeon fishery, we request that the department produce the science that establishes the necessary for further action. If the sturgeon population is in trouble, eliminating retention is necessary for conservation, then please impose a closure on all user groups. Eliminating the least impactful user group from a fishery does not represent management based on science. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Lewis Boyd, please come forward. Mr. Harrigan.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Nate Harrigan. Thank you for the opportunity to address the proposed sturgeon closure in Puget Sound. I would like to discuss Puget Sound harvest history from the 2010 harvest anomaly that was brought to the issue before the Commission. The Puget Sound harvest history is based on catch records that were collected by the department. Historical data has only been collected for sturgeon in Puget Sound for the last 10 years. Harvest information suggests that between 2000 and 2011, Puget Sound recreational sturgeon anglers harvested between 150 and 500 sturgeon annually. This is in one exception in 2010, which I will discuss in a moment. Puget Sound recreational fishermen have had an insignificant impact on the Columbia River population. This has been recognized by fisheries biologists from both Washington and Oregon. Washington recreational sturgeon fishermen outside the Columbia River system account for less than 3% of total harvest. Oregon coastal fishermen also account for less than 3% of the harvest, though historically have a higher annual harvest rate than Washington. These harvest numbers are accounted for and considered in the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Conservation Plan that was used by the Joint Committee to set harvest accusations. The Washington and Oregon fisheries outside the Department of the Columbia River are listed as an area of concern either state's sturgeon reports. And while our department seeks to close Puget Sound, Oregon has expressions of no intentions of closing their coastal fisheries. So the question becomes, why is the department targeting Puget Sound for closure? Part of the answer is the harvest numbers from 2010. In 2010, just over 900 sturgeon were harvested in the Puget Sound. This represents a significant increase from the previous year's total of just over 500. 2010 represents a harvest anomaly that, although not fully understood, can easily be explained. For reasons unknown, possibly thousands of sturgeon moved to a very small body of water in the Puget Sound. This was easily acceptable by the land, and several hundred sturgeon were harvested over a two-month period. Local anglers and regional managers quickly recognized the issue and sought an emergency closure for a small piece of the water that held the fish. This request was not headed by the policymakers in Olympia, and subsequently in the Puget Sound harvest nearly doubled. This harvest anomaly is further supported by preliminary 2011 harvest reports that indicate the Puget Sound harvested less than 300 sturgeon. Current information does not support that the proposed Puget Sound closure is warranted or even necessary. I would therefore request the commissioners to vote no on this rule change, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Paul Derrick, please step forward. Mr. Boyd.
Okay, thank you. Chair Becker, commissioners, it's good to see a full nine of you again. It's been a long time. So, my topic today is going to be policy C3001. The purpose of this policy is to provide guidelines for management of the Lower Columbia River white sturgeon population and fisheries. We are here today because these fish come into Puget Sound to feed, and sports fishers catch these fish no differently than others that are in the joint accord in Washington and Oregon State suggests. The definition of the policy and intent: the Lower Columbia River white sturgeon population inhabits the waters of Columbia River tributaries downstream of Bonneville Dam and migrates into the ocean, coastal estuaries, and, as we know now, Puget Sound to feed. The intent of this policy is to provide consistent management guidelines to promote a healthy population. Several fishery management objectives in this policy, like Commissioner Smith alluded to, was manage sturgeon harvest outside the main stem Lower Columbia River, consistent with Lower Columbia River sturgeon
conservation and management needs. Contrary to policy, the closing of the retention of sturgeon in Puget Sound would leave retention only to joint state accord areas, which is open for retention everywhere in Oregon and Washington except Puget Sound. Another part to the policy would be maintain viable and diverse recreational and commercial fishing opportunities. If our meager 3-4% take constitutes a ban of retention of sturgeon in Puget Sound, I can't imagine what it would be for where the majority is caught in the lower Columbia River. We in Puget Sound aren't here to catch the last sturgeon, but we sure would like to be included with the rest of the region when retaining sturgeon is practical. Maybe the commission can add in the letter to the director that Puget Sound area would like to be part of the policy C3001, representing us like the rest of the region. Thank you very much.
Thank you. John Farrar, please.
Good morning. My name is Paul Derrick. I've been fishing sturgeon for over 30 years. As I'm sure you're aware, over the last 5 years, the Columbia River has been invaded by Stellar and California sea lions. The sea lions have discovered the bottleneck that the Bonneville creates for migrating fish. In 2005, the Army Corps of Engineers observed one sturgeon harvested by sea lions. In 2010, the Army Corps of Engineers observed and witnessed nearly 2,200 harvested. Biologists estimated that the sea lion predation on the Columbia River could range between 4,000 and 11,000 sturgeon. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has tried and continues to try to multiple non-lethal methods of hazing and trap and transportation with the minimal success. Although this is a very hot button issue that comes at a time when enough is enough, it is time for Washington and Oregon wildlife managers, state officials, legislators, and tribes to pool resources and options for curbing the mass predation of fish by sea lions. Every report that has been published in the last 5 years points to sea lions as a major component to fish conservation efforts. How does this issue relate to the proposal of the Puget Sound sturgeon closure? Even minimal success to further deter the sea lions from inhabiting the river will more than account for the entire impact of the Puget Sound harvest. Please vote no to the proposed Puget Sound closure. Thank you.
Thank you. David Hell, please come forward. Mr. Farrar.
My name is John Farrar. I'm a licensed fly fishing guide, and greetings to all of you commissioners. Madam Chair, I would say Director Anderson, but he's not with us tonight, today. There's a cloud of uncertainty over the fishery of the state of Washington. It's extremely harmful to my profession as a professional guide. I first addressed this commission in the late 1970s when Larry Cassidy was the chair. We met in Vancouver, Washington. I spoke in favor of catch and release fishing. In 1981, this the Department of Fish and Wildlife, whatever, then the Department of Game, endorsed catch and release fishing and established seasons on the Skagit and elsewhere throughout the state. It was an open invitation for me to become a guide, because that's what I believe in. I started my guide career on the Skagit River and Sauk. For the last, those rivers have been closed. That season has been closed four times. Once in the early 90s, and in 92, and last year and the year before. And now it appears it will be closed again. This are the rules I play by. But whatever is published here is not lived by. It changes every time an emergency order goes through. And what else? Now, how am I to book clients from Salt Lake, Boston, wherever? I can't tell them we're going to have a season. We're going to have a fishery. Now, I will understand what the last time it was open, the Skagit was open, the numbers just weren't there. And I think the department was a little embarrassed because they'd opened a fishery that didn't exist. So they closed it the next year and the next year. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. James Forsland, please come forward.
Good morning. My name is David Hell. I'm a sports fisherman. I'd like to discuss the issues raised by the department that this closure is also in response to Fraser River sturgeon potentially being harvested in Puget Sound. The Fraser River sturgeon population has been in decline and faces many of the same challenges that the Columbia River fishery encounters. Sturgeon conservation, research, and strict management become necessary for population recovery. Canadian officials are currently in the process of correcting decades of mismanagement, pollution, hydroelectric construction, unregulated mining operations, erratic water flows and water temperatures, large-scale poaching, massive die-offs of spanning breeding stock. They face many difficult challenges on the road to recovery. So is there a potential that Fraser River sturgeon being caught in Puget Sound? Yes. Is there a potential that Fraser River sturgeon being caught in the Columbia River? The answer is also yes. Is there a potential that Sacramento sturgeon, also a threatened species, are potentially being caught in the Columbia River? Yes. The truth is that every angler fishing in a waterway that is unobstructed to marine waters could potentially catch fish from many other areas. It has been documented that much like the Columbia and Sacramento sturgeon, these fish wander marine waters from Alaska to Mexico. There's no question that there are enormous data gaps and unknowns associated with how these three species move through marine waters and to what extent they intermingle. The Oregon Conservation Plan has identified an issue as an area in need of study and generic testing in the near future. As part of the process of educating ourselves in this issue, our committee met with Canadian representatives from the Fraser River Conservation Society and the Fraser River Guides Association. They shared with us a summary of their challenges and strategies associated with sturgeon recovery. When asked their position on the proposed Puget Sound closure, their response was very clear. They're working diligently to base management activities on scientific information, research, and data collection. Therefore, they were unable to support the department's proposed closure of the Puget Sound fishery due to the fact there is no scientific evidence to support this action. The department's connection to Puget Sound fishery to the Fraser River is management based on possibilities and potentials. The action runs contrary to one of their primary goals of resource management, to use scientifically based research and data as a core element of management. Please vote no on this proposal.
Thank you. Ted Beach.
Hello, my name is James Forsland. I'd like to thank you guys for giving me a chance to speak here today. First of all, I'd like to start off by saying that this fishery has been a part of my life as long as I can remember, and a part of my family's friends. And I think I speak for a lot of people who aren't here today, probably because they had other things to do, other obligations. But I'd like to start off by saying that this fishery not only is going to, if it's closed, it's going to impact businesses, it's going to impact people's livelihoods, it's going to impact a way of life for people in Stanwood, Warm Beach, Camano Island, all the surrounding river systems. I personally have only kept a couple sturgeon in my lifetime, and I can't understand why this is even on the table right now, considering how small of a sliver that we're talking about in the overall harvest that this actually represents. And there's a lot of consequences, you know, to businesses and other people in the area that this is going to affect if this closure goes through. So I just want you guys to all kind of consider that that way. And also, I'd just like to read a little piece here. As a Puget Sound angler, I realize that in today's wildlife management structure, the department and local tribes are bound in a treaty act as co-managers. While department regulators are attempting to close the Puget Sound sturgeon fishery, tribal co-managers have set retention limits for tribal commercial sustenance fishermen at 10 sturgeon per day per angler. Co-management is a difficult issue, but it is hard to understand. Why the department is attempting to close this fishery to recreational retention, this rule change would essentially allocate 100% of the Puget Sound and river harvest to tribal fishermen. This proposed closure does not represent a fair and balanced approach to co-management or resource allocation. So I just hope that you guys vote no on this rule change. Thank you.
Thank you. George Allen, please come forward. And Mr. Beach.
Madam Chair, Deputy Director, Commissioners, thank you for your time to be here. I am the Vice President of Walleye Anglers Unlimited in Tri-Cities. I'm also the chairperson for the Walleye Conservation Committee on our organization. And I'm here to speak regarding the limit increase on walleye on Lake Roosevelt. I would like to applaud Commissioner Dovia, excuse me for if I pronounce it wrong, for your comment and holding off on doing that. I have fished literally thousands of hours on Lake Roosevelt just strictly for walleye. And you hit the nail on the head from our perspective and from your studies. You know, thousands of dollars have been spent, federal and state dollars, on studies on Lake Roosevelt on walleye, trout, kokanee. And I trust all of you received my letter I sent to you prior to the December cutoff, and I referred to in that letter to the studies that were done. One of the studies was in 1993-94, the Underwood study, where the walleye population by his study was overfished at that time, and that's why the population of the walleye dropped significantly from 100,000 down to 30-some thousand, 40-some thousand. So the game department, the Fish and Game Department, has an opportunity here to enhance not just the walleye fishery on Roosevelt, but also the trout, the kokanee, smallmouth bass. And one way to do that is to increase the food population of the forage on Lake Roosevelt. That is one of the major problems on Lake Roosevelt. We can't do anything about the fluctuation of the lake. What happens, as you all know, when that lake drops down, it takes away the habitat for the spawning perch and bait fish, which the walleye feed on. The other studies that were done, Baldwin study in 2019-99 showed that the significantly drop in mortality to the kokanee and trout and walleye dropped down to 7%, and that was because they changed their release program, raised the fish a little bigger before they released them out of the net pens. So the walleye is not the demon fish that everybody makes him out to be or her out to be. So I would encourage you to take a look at possibly your Meesburg Ringgold hatchery. Stop raising walleye there to put in Liberty Lake and start raising perch or some other type of bait fish to put back into our reservoir, because we're losing the forage in Roosevelt, and that's what's hurting these fish in Roosevelt. Any questions?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Looks
yes,
like we have a question here. Commissioner Mankin.
This was your letter?
That's correct, sir.
Yes. I want to compliment you on the content of it. It's well-reasoned and good scientifically based communication between you and the commission.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Appreciate
much.
That.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I like your comment on the smallmouth bass situation in the lake. Relative to the walleye as well as the trout, do you have you guys looked at that population?
Not the smallmouth or the trout. We're strictly pretty much walleye, but I have looked at your studies that have been done over the years, and there's really not a lot of basis on the smallmouth, but there is on the walleye. There is a little bit of study on the burbot and the kokanee, the trout, obviously. With your comment, sir, earlier, would that include 3, 12, and 13, all three of those? That you would recommend before anything was done with the limit?
I guess I don't follow.
Well, there's a proposal on number 3, number 12, and number 13. I think one of them was the San Paul River section of increasing the limit on there.
My comments are mainly for the 16, going from 8 to 16 on the Fall River.
Right. But yeah. Would it encompass the whole reservoir?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah. But I think if you saw the studies, it looks, I forgot the numbers off the top of my head, but I think the walleye composition was 30-something percent of the total fish composition, and now we're down to 20-some percent. And I think the new composition mainly has been the rise of the smallmouth bass. And I was curious to see if we think that's
correct.
Too much of a competitor from the food sources.
And the burbot's starting to rise, too. There was a study done in the burbot, I would think it was in the early 2000s, and it's in the letter that I sent, is also becoming a factor. The walleye clubs in the area, our club, Spokane Walleye Club, Kettle Falls Walleye Club, I'm sure, I know our club would be more than happy to work with the game department on habitat enhancement or anything we could do to make this a fishery for everybody, not just the walleye, but for the trout, the kokanee, the bass, and burbot, and so on. And I think we could do that if we take a look at the hatchery, like I'm talking about, because that hatchery has a natural spring coming into it where the water, in your own biology, just told us that the water's too warm really to raise walleye, but they continue to try to raise walleye and put them in Liberty Lake. Let's turn that into a perch hatchery per se and put those fish back in the reservoirs where they're needed. Any other questions?
Commissioner Carpenter?
Your comment about forage fish, has there been any study done on that? And I assume you're just talking strictly about yellow perch, or is there other forage fish in there that are part of this food chain? There's other forage fish. There has been studies done on a lot of studies on whitefish. They are finding, and this is from my own observation, for a long time everybody felt that walleye would not eat squawfish. But there's been several instances where we've seen squawfish, when we caught a walleye, a 24-inch walleye might have a 10-inch squawfish in its mouth. Crawdads are another forage for the walleye. Mud leeches, they're not as prevalent as they used to be, but there is a population of mud leeches in there. There are some other chub-type fish in Roosevelt. Unfortunately, why the bass, the burbot, the walleye won't eat the carp minnows, I don't understand that, but that'd be a tremendous forage for them if they would.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dick Berg, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Allen.
Chairman Wecker, commissioners, Deputy Director Store. My name is George Allen. I'm with Walleyes Unlimited Northwest. I will be president of the Spokane Walleye Club again in a few weeks. I'm here to talk about the walleye regulation in Lake Roosevelt. I kind of wish Commissioner Duvier and Commissioner Carpenter would have called me at 1 o'clock this morning when I was leaving Spokane. I'd have gone back to bed. So I agree with what they said. Give it two more years and look at it, because we're looking at the lowest water level we have had in years. And it's, you know, I do all the tournaments up there. I am the waymaster for all the tournaments, have been for 14 years. So I've been to all of them. First year, you know, we've ever weighed fish on the sand at the Kettle Falls tournament. And then for our tournament a month later, the end of July, the water was almost up into the parking lot, so, and cold. Never seen it so cold in July. And that didn't help the trout. They entrain and go out. So, you know, we'd like to see it a couple more years. I'm also a member of the Inland Fish Advisory Committee, IFPAG, and the 8-fish bonus limit, that was kind of my idea. That's what we would hope for is a minimum. We'd rather see it stay the way it is for several years and more study on it. So, and that item number 14, the Kettle River, the Spokane Walleye Club is opposed to changes up there unless it's to allow the kids to fish with bait. That would be a good one. And also on the two rod, I helped write the last 3 2-rod proposals that went in, and the Spokane arm was always meant to be included in that, so I would urge you all to pass that and, you know, make it on all the arms in Roosevelt. So,
Commissioner Duvia?
Yeah, thanks for your comments and testimony. I just want to make it clear, the staff's bringing this rule forward was strictly to try to enhance the walleye quality on the lake and quantity. And it's still kind of a little bit of a mystery what we can do to make that fishery better. It's difficult when we're trying to maximize a trout fishery and a walleye in the same place, but I think it can be done. But so we're looking for opportunities and answers. So the 16 limit was not a negative. It was thought to be maybe a possibility it would make the walleye more quality. So in the future, if you guys got suggestions, I think the commission as well as the staff would be greatly appreciated to take a look at them.
Okay, thank you. On the 16 fish limit, I'd just like to point out that Canyon Ferry in Montana, totally different lake, but they went to a 20 fish limit there. You can't buy a fish over 14 inches in Canyon Ferry anymore. And when it started out, nobody kept a 14 inch fish. Now everybody does, because that's all you catch. So, you know, and nobody keeps small fish up there. They cull them until they get them. And there are people that will go to the mouth of the Spokane right now. If you had a 16 fish limit, they would take 16 20 inch fish out of that system. And if they do that day after day, the fishery is going to crash. So,
Commissioner,
that's all I got to say.
Commissioner Smith?
That gets into my question. It's a simple one. What's a good size walleye in Lake Roosevelt today?
It depends, but if you catch one 16 inches, that's a nice fish in there. I won't keep anything under about 14. I mean, you know, there's more meat on a 12-inch perch than there is on a 14-inch walleye.
Yeah.
So
those are still small fish.
I mean, yes, they are. But a 16-inch fish in Lake Roosevelt will be the same age as an 18 or a 19-inch fish in Banks Lake. And it's because of the fluctuation in water levels and the feed and stuff. So
thank you.
It's kind of a barren system.
Thanks.
Thank you for allowing me here.
Jack Berryman, please come forward. Okay. Mr. Burke?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. My name is Richard Burge, and I'm the Vice President of Science for the Wild Steelhead Coalition. I'd like to speak to you today about the department's rule changes as they relate to recovery of listed steelhead in Puget Sound. These stocks were listed in 2006, and very few actions have been taken to date to recover these fish. Since listing, we've seen the cedar go extinct, and the green Puyallup Nisqually reach very serious lows. The Swinomish and the Snohomish are not far behind at 50% and about 30% of their respective escapement goals. I brought a series of charts to give to you some way so you can actually see for yourselves how serious these rivers are. It seems that we're waiting for NOAA, ESA office, to mandate change. And the department seemed to also find that this listing is due to habitat degradation and low ocean productivity, which is partially true. But it seems to neglect a considerable amount of very recent research on management needs and on hatchery impacts that can be used to make important changes now to initiate recovery. The department is closing Puget Sound rivers to fishing on February 1, and we do support this rule. It's badly needed. But we find that this is only a small step in what is needed. To interject right here, I want to tell you that what is going to happen is that all those that fish for wild fish now must sit on the shore or go someplace else. On the other hand, we're continuing fairly robust hatchery plantings, and the hatchery fisheries will continue. So we're favoring, by far, hatchery fishermen over those that want to fish for wild fish, who also have fished catch and release for many years to save these fish. There are many management changes that can be made immediately to help the situation, and I'll mention just one or two. The first is protecting rainbow trout from harvest in anadromous rivers. And this would help a lot in rebuilding wild steelhead spawning populations. Rainbow trout are, in fact, resident steelhead, and it is shown in many research studies to be important in the spawning, the gene flow, the productivity, and the recovery of wild anadromous fish. Resident steelhead spawn with anadromous fish throughout most of their range. Recent genetic studies in the Columbia River, and there's quite a few now, have shown that resident steelhead spawn with anadromous steelhead and returning steelhead have as much as 20 to 40% of their parentage as resident fish. In some cases, the number has been as much as 20% of the anadromous fish have been produced. Is that it?
Yes, that is the beeping noise. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Hang on. Commissioner Mencken.
Could you just take about 30 seconds and go through and list your other ones? I'd like very much to have the commission hear what you have to say.
Okay. What I was going to continue with is we do recommend no harvest of rainbow trout and the use of selective gear in fishing for all trout species in anadromous rivers. The next thing I wanted to talk about were hatcheries. And the department has some recent information on hatcheries and the spawning population of hatchery fish, and it is 10 to 50% of the total populations in our rivers in Puget Sound. And the models produced in Oregon by Mark Chilcote shows that that size of spawning population will reduce the wild fish by 20 to 60%. And I wanted to continue just by saying that waiting until the 2015 deadline of the commission to make changes in hatchery fish means that we're going to have those fish in the rivers until 2017 and later. And the final thing I wanted to talk about were the Whirlpaw and Nacelle rivers, but I think you have gotten a lot of testimony on them. But basically, I have contacted the department and received information from them on their run sizes, and the escapement goals do not, the run sizes today do not support the escapement goals. The escapement goals were set in probably in the 1980s, and they do not have the data, the run size, the spawner data that they used to set those escapement goals, and they can't tell us what models were used. And so my recommendation to you would be, let's not close those rivers this year unless we can find that original data, but let's take some very proactive conservation changes. One would be catch and release fishing, another one would be use of selective gear, possibly the use of no boats while fishing on the river, just fishing from the shore, to be more conservative until we have a chance to reevaluate that goal.
So you're saying the escapement goals are inadequate or just too high? Unknown. I mean,
the total system has an escapement goal of 10,000 fish. Recent runs have been in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 4,000. And the data that they have or were able to supply me with started in 1996. yet I'm sure that the data that was used to set those goals was from the mid-1980s when the department through the Gibbons et al. Report set goals for all the bulk case area. And so I would assume that they use surrogate information from those studies to set the goals on the Wolfson SL.
Okay. And yeah, thank you, Dick.
Okay, thank you.
Chair.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I was simply going to ask if he could submit his testimony so we could have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can give the charts, the graphs, the tables to Tammy there, and she'll copy them. Okay, Rich Sims, come forward, please.
Dick, do you have written testimony, Dick?
It's a mess, but I'll be glad to give it to you.
Well, if you'd like.
We did submit testimony through the normal process.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Berryman?
Yes, thank you. First, I just want to thank the commissioners for having this opportunity. I think what you do is extremely important, and I appreciate that. And I want to thank the department as well. We've been sort of battling for 10 years now, and I think the department has made some significant changes. My name is Jack Berryman. I'm past president of the Wild Steelhead Coalition, and now I'm a trustee. I'm also a member of the Willapaw Anglers. I own property in Pacific County. I've fished down there since 1975. I support the letter of Frank Amato. You got a letter also from Ron Nanny. I just talked with both of them last night, and there's some serious problems with the way this is laid out as far as Willapaw Bay. And I want to touch upon those now with the South Coast Stream, specifically Pacific County. The first one is sort of what Dick was getting to there in the end, and that's closing the rivers to steelhead angling February 28th versus the end of March. The NACEL has been open into April simply because we worked with the department, showed them the data that there was an extremely healthy population. They agreed to keep it open to April, and that's what it is still today. The escapement goals that were set now are 3,000 fish for the NACEL, 3,000 for the Willapaw, and the most recent data that we had working with the department actually in Montesano over the years was 800 in each of those two rivers. So this is just extremely, extremely high. We would be the first to say close the whole thing if it's not healthy. I would quit fishing, but it is healthy. And as Dick was saying, the data just isn't there. So by closing it early, it puts this extreme burden on those of us that prefer to fish selectively. The second and just as important point, and I bet this is repeated in these other watersheds, but I know it about the NACEL. The department has proposed to open now the first Saturday in June through October 31, the two major spawning tributaries of the NACEL River, North Fork and Alder Creek. The department's own SASE report quotes saying, most spawning takes place in the mainstream NACEL and North Fork NACEL River and Alder Creek. I mean, it's like opening up the nursery. You know, this has been protected water. The deadline is there, and then the two forks open up. So opening this up in the summer is defeating your purpose. You know, and it just doesn't make sense. And finally, I've just looked at the rivers I know. This leads me to believe that whole Willapaw proposal has the same kind of issues in the other rivers and their tributaries, like Forks Creek.
Okay. Well, we'll look at that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kurt Kramer, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Sims.
Good morning, Commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony this morning. My name is Rich Sims, and as President, representing the Wild Steelhead Coalition. The mission of our growing organization is simply dedicated to increasing the return of wild steelhead to the waters of the Pacific Northwest. While we have provided more detailed testimony in our written comments, I want to take the opportunity to provide focus on three points. In reference to number 8, Puget Sound wild steelhead protection rules, the WSC supports the proposal to close Puget Sound rivers early to protect wild steelhead. However, with support of these closures, the WSC continues to request the department to look beyond simply closing sport fishing opportunities and take a stronger leadership role to protect and rebuild runs of wild steelhead. For example, opportunities can include establishing various streams with quality habitat as wild rivers free from hatchery and aggression. The organization would like to take the opportunity to also thank the department for listening and eliminating the Snyder Creek broodstock program and making the Salduck River on the Olympic Peninsula managed as a wild steelhead stream, which no doubt will provide big benefits for wild fish in years to come. Steelhead and rainbow trout. The WSC provided testimony to this point 2 years ago and remains dogged in our message to our commission and department. The best available science has proven that wild rainbow trout, resident wild steelhead, play a significant role in the genetic diversity and sustainability of wild steelhead. We continue with our request for the department to take immediate action and place an importance on protecting rainbow trout in Washington waters to promote the conservation and restoration of ESA listed wild steelhead. Number 10, coastal stream strategy, Willapa Bay blanket closure. The WSC requests the department to postpone this blanket closure due to proposal to a major rule cycle while the department finds, reevaluates, and updates their models so a more informed decision from better data can be made for this basin. In the meantime, we request the department to utilize proactive measures such as selective gear restrictions put into place to help decrease mortality impacts of wild steelhead. Also, the North Coast stocks on the Olympic Peninsula are being pushed very hard from increased angling pressure due to closures of other systems such as Puget Sound and potentially this basin. In our view, a simple blanket closure such as this without good information is simply going to intensify pressure on the North Coast stocks, which are at risk of suffering the same fate as so many famous rivers unless we act proactively to control pressure on shrinking resource and thinking in terms of recovery. As a last point, the WSC also supports increased opportunity on the Wind River. Hatchery fish were ceased to be planted and wild fish responded on this system. This opportunity should be noted as an example of what can happen when a river is managed as a wild steelhead river, that the river can respond without hatchery integration and a sea of bad news regarding wild steelhead. Let's celebrate it as a success.
Thank you. Okay, William Atlas, please come forward. And Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Commissioners, and a special welcome to the two new members. Thank you very much for taking time to volunteer and step forward on behalf of our resources and us that use our resource. Thank you very much. I'm Kurt Kramer. I live in Marysville. I'm a lifelong angler in the state of Washington. And today, at risk to my reputation, I'm here to argue that a fishery stay open. As part of the emergency actions and changes on Puget Sound steelhead, there was a number of proposals to close big sections of rivers. Today I'd like to talk specifically about the lower Skagit, that section of the river downstream of Mount Vernon. That's the tidal portion of the Skagit River, the delta, if you will. For many decades, that section of the river has been open year-round, and in the spring of the year, the fishery down there is directed towards abundant sea run cutthroat and bull trout. There's very few little steelhead fishing going on, but lots of fishing going on for these resident anadromous trout, sea run cutthroat, bull trout. This is a very unique fishery. That kind of habitat is different, special in Puget Sound. It's lots of water. There's approximately 20 miles of large channels down there. It has marvelous access. I gave you, I listed 6 boat launches. There's actually 7. It's a great small boat activity. All wild fish, they're robust populations. The bull trout in the Skagit River are the most abundant bull trout, most healthiest bull trout in the state of Washington. The Skagit, sea run cutthroat are right up there with that. The state allows harvest of both those fish. I think it's a crime that this recreational opportunity is being lost without any measurable, or virtually no measurable benefit to the resource of concern, the wild steelhead. I should mention that I've built a career on being a wild fish advocate, and I continue to to do so. I think this is a misplaced effort to protect wild steelhead and at the cost of a significant recreational opportunity. I'm here to argue for it. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you guys folks may have, but I'll leave the rest of that.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Kurt, thank you for doing this. I've worked with Kurt for probably 20 years in other venues, as he was our biologist on behalf of the department for decades up in the North End, and I totally concur that the consideration of closing that fishery for sea run cutthroat bull trout dollies. I mean, I grew up on fishing on that river and catching dollies, and it's just appalling to even consider that would be on the table. It's the steelhead caught are non-existent. They don't fish. They don't target steelhead down. There's a lot of fly fishing for sea run cutthroat, and I would strongly encourage the department to take Mr. Kramer's comments. If there were ever were a person in the agency that took a conservation approach, it's always been Kurt, and I've been very respectful of that. But to consider closing this stretch of the Skagit River, this makes no sense.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Thomas Burns. Mr. Atlas.
Good morning, Commissioners. My colleague Thomas Burns and I have prepared a handout which depicts river size and escapement goals for several comparably sized rivers in Washington State. If Madam Secretary wouldn't mind distributing those to the Commission, would that be all right? We just need it as a talking point. So while those are getting handed out, let me just introduce myself. My name is Will Atlas. I'm the chair of the FFF Steelhead Committee, and I'm a trained fisheries biologist. As you may know, the FFF Steelhead Committee is a conservation organization dedicated to the conservation of wild steelhead and salmonids. So generally, we tend to strongly support efforts to conserve wild steelhead in the state of Washington, and we applaud WDFW for any proactive measures that are taken to protect wild steelhead stocks in the state. However, regarding proposed closures, blanket closures in the Willapa Basin, we believe these closures are unwarranted and that the escapement goals that are currently in place are not a reflection of the biological capacity of those systems to support wild steelhead. As Jack Berryman said, we believe those systems are some of the healthiest in the state, as DFW concluded in both 1992 and 2002 SASE reports, concluding that all those river systems within the Willapa Basin were indeed healthy for wild steelhead. And what you can see from the graph that we've distributed are the escapement goals for several of the rivers within the Willapa Basin compared to rivers of comparable size, the x-axis being drainage area, proxy for river size, and that the Nacelle, in fact, has the highest escapement goal of any coastal river, despite the fact that it is among the smallest third in terms of drainage area. Now, if we believe that the closures were warranted based on the conservation need, we would immediately step forward to support them. However, the fact is we believe these are some of the healthiest wild steelhead populations in the state, and that the current escapement goals need to be revised given robust methodologies based on par production and the capacity of the river to support wild fish. The variability we've seen in recent years in those systems is simply a product of marine survival and is not a reflection of a long-term decline of those systems. If we want to implement anything to protect wild fish in a proactive fashion, what we need to do is look to move towards selective fisheries, limiting harvest and bait-associated mortality on juveniles that are rearing in the river, as Jack alluded to. And what we also need to do is look at curtailing hatchery production in some of these systems. These are some of the most productive wild steelhead populations in the state. WFW has laid out the goal of establishing wild steelhead management zones throughout the state. These would be great opportunities to do that and provide wild steelhead catch-and-release angling opportunity that is an important part of WDFW's mandate. So I'd encourage you to delay implementing these rules until we've had a chance to sit down with the biologist. I spoke to Mike Scharf, the district biologist. He can't tell me where these escapement goals came from. And it appears to me that they're simply arbitrary, maybe put in place at some time ago to reduce the risk that there would be wild steelhead harvest implemented in the Willapa. So please delay implementing this until the escapement goals can be reconsidered and revised based on the biology. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? I can have to answer questions.
Commissioner Jennings.
I just want to say thank you. It's very nice when you bring us data that's easily consumable. So.
Well, that's Thomas's work, actually.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks. Okay, Mr. Burns?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank the commission for inviting public testimony on the regulation change proposals. And then I'll introduce myself. My name's Thomas Burens, and I'm a lifelong Washington angler and recently received my master's in fisheries biology from the UW. So I'm also a fisheries biologist. And I actually had the pleasure of doing part of my master's work down in the Willapa Bay watershed on steelhead and sea run cutthroat trout. And I've angled down there for the last several years, and so it came as quite a surprise to me to see in the recent regulation change proposals that these systems were being proposed to be closed early to protect wild steelhead because they apparently hadn't met their escapement goals for actually the duration of time basically that the escapement has been monitored. And this kind of went against my sense of these systems from having been out there and comparing the relative abundance there to other areas where I have both fished and worked. And so I actually went through SASE and some of the management plans to gather all the escapement goals that WDFW has, and the goals that are presented in this graph are based on the Gibbons et al. Method. Bob Gibbons was a WDFW employee that put together escapement goals for steel in the 1980s based on par production area. Some goals were subsequently revised, such as in the Skagit Basin, based on spawner-recruit relationships. So those are kind of the two methodologies for developing escapement goals, one based on actual area of watersheds and habitat rearing area, and the other one based on stock recruit relationships. And the black line that I've fit through these data is a linear regression through zero for the black data points, which are all other watersheds in western Washington of similar size to the Willapa Rivers. The dashed line is a regression fit through the Willapa data points, which are the open circles. And I guess I just want to reiterate the points that Will just made, that basically it appears from this casual look at the data, at least, that there's kind of a very different relationship being shown here between basin area and escapement goal in the Willapa Basin. And I'm not sure why that would be, because a lot of these other watersheds are very comparable in their habitat characteristics. And I'm all for conservation, and I applaud the department taking a proactive approach in conserving steelhead, especially considering recent ESA listings. But I don't like to see angling opportunities limited if it's not eliminated, if it isn't necessary to do so. So I just appreciate the department to consider where these goals came from and potentially evaluate them before blanket closures. So thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks.
And I can take any questions, too.
No. Thank you. Well, that concludes the public input. The hearing is now closed for that item. We were a little bit behind, well, over 25 minutes behind. So let's take a short break before we have our next item. So quarter to 11, come back.